Hey everyone, this is part two of my Cedar and Cotton interview with Nasira Lateef. If you haven't already, go back and listen to part one with Raina Smallwood. Thanks for listening.
Never knew what I was missing. Never knew when we'd start kissing. I found you.
Are you from Baltimore?
I am. Baltimore, born and bred. My mom is from Baltimore. My dad's from Baltimore.
Oh, your whole family's from this area?
Yep, this is home.
Oh, gotcha. Now, what was your childhood like? Did you live in the city or the county?
I lived in the city. Mm-hmm. I kind of love that question. My childhood was great. My parents were amazing. They were really good at creating spaces that didn't exist for us, making up clubs. They invented a club called the African American Community Culture Club. We essentially met with their friends and their friends' kids on Saturday mornings and did woodworking and cooking and sewing.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Were those classes or those clubs, was that during school or was that in the summertime? My sister and I, my mom did not allow us to sit at home and do nothing during the summer. We always had to be at camp, or she would just lock us outside.
It was both. The classes were usually on the weekends, so it was throughout the year, and then it would get more intense during the summer.
Really?
Yeah.
What were some of your favorite classes?
I remember a woodworking class, which is interesting because
it makes sense.
It makes sense now.
In retrospect.
And we made kind of an art piece with wood, and we sanded it, stained it. It was like a silhouette of Nefertiti, and there was glitter, which I'm still very into as well.
How old were you when you made it?
Maybe 10.
Like a statue, like a bust of Nefertiti?
No, so it was kind of a flat sheet of wood and then an overlay with a different color stain with the silhouette.
Like a wood carving or?
Yes, we carved it.
Oh, okay, that's really cool. Because it's Nefertiti, did your parents instill in you a very pro-black ideology growing up?
Yes.
They're like, black is beautiful?
Yes.
That's good. Once you graduated high school, or you know what? Tell me about high school. What was high school like for you?
High school was interesting. I was really introverted, which I still am. I had a small group of friends. A lot of them didn't go to my school specifically. But it was overall a good time in my life. Nothing really stands out about it, though.
No crazy high school drama?
None.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Poly.
Do you still have that visceral rivalry with City?
No, I'd never had it.
Really? Oh, you just weren't into it?
I just wasn't into it.
So I'm just here to go to school, learn, and go home. That's it.
Yeah, is the day over yet or not?
You're just looking at the clock. The clock's like, why is she staring at me?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, where did you live?
In Northwest Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. So off of Northern Parkway, Park Heights area.
Where exactly in Park Heights? Like what road? What road you live off of?
It was Glen Avenue. I don't know. It's
Glen Avenue. Is that close to, what's it called? Park Heights and Cold Spring? Well, you said Northern Parkway, so that's
Northern
further
Parkway,
north.
Yeah. Okay. It's close to, there's a big car dealership on Reisterstown Road, Carbiz.
Yeah.
So it's the street kind of right there.
Or how close is it to the plaza?
It's maybe 5-minute drive from the plaza.
All right, not too bad.
Northern Parkway and the plaza.
What did you do after high school? Was there school or did you just jump right into work?
No, I went to college, Hampton University.
That was it?
That was it.
What was your experience going to Hampton? Because when you talk about HBCUs in this area, you always hear about Morgan, Coppin, Bowie, Eastern Shore, and of course Howard. What was going to Hampton like? I had an old coworker. She went to Hampton, but she's older. Shout out to Nikki. Hope your kids are doing okay. What was it like going to Hampton?
I loved it. I had a really great experience there. I majored in physics, and it was four of us. So it was really a personalized instructional program. So I think my experience may be a little different than other people who were in a larger classroom setting. But even more so than the school itself, the people I met are still some of the most important people in my life.
Did you make the conscious decision to go to an HBCU, or was it like your parents went there, or what?
No, my parents didn't go there. I didn't make a conscious decision to go to an HBCU. I applied to a myriad of colleges, and Hampton gave me money. And
you're like, all right, so I'm going.
I was like, this is it. Yeah.
Good, good. Mm-hmm. Now, were you in college or out of college when you got interested in furniture and design? Because I feel like that's a far cry from physics.
It was actually before college. My entire life, I've been interested in furniture and design. But even in college, I enjoyed making a welcoming space out of my dorm room. That was kind of the space that everyone would come and gather. And I didn't have anything more than anyone else had in their dorm room. But there are ways to arrange furniture, to use the right type of lighting just to make it a comfortable space for everyone.
And with your physics background, you can mm-hmm. figure out ways to overcome gravity with furniture, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's you had a floating bed.
You figured us out.
I got it from Rain Aside. What inspired you personally to start Cedar and Cotton?
It was actually a good deal. It had to do with Raina and our connection and our shared interest. We've been friends for more than a decade. And even within our friendship, there came a time all we ever talked about was furniture and design. All day long, chatting back and forth. Oh my God, did you see the new post on apartment therapy?
I was just about to ask you that. Okay, cool. So,
And then talking about design in our own homes, bouncing ideas off of each other. Mm-hmm. What do you think about me painting my bedroom this color? Or what do you think about this piece? And it was just kind of a natural progression when we...
It just made sense.
Exactly.
Why do you think people mm-hmm. are so attracted and drawn to vintage art and clothing, vintage cars? What draws people to things that have places in the past?
I think there's a story there, which you don't get when you purchase something new. And I think unknowingly, we're probably drawn to things that we have some sort of historical connection to. And in a way, we're extending someone else's story.
What is your favorite? It's art style, right? Or like furniture? Like what? Yeah. What's that called again? Art style? No. I mean, like. Mid-century modern is an art style, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just had to clarify mm-hmm. that. So what's your favorite art style? Or is it mid-century modern?
It's not, actually. Which is interesting because we have a lot of mid-century modern pieces, which I love. I don't have a favorite style, though. I don't want to be confined to that space. I love mid-century modern. It's very popular right now. But I also want to explore design from other countries, from other eras.
Do you feel like, and you might not be able to answer this, do you feel like throughout time, different countries, even though they could be oceans away, still have the same style aesthetic?
I think that throughout history, the styles do mirror each other, same time, different place. And that's probably a lot in part to do with what was happening at the time, what conveniences people had or didn't have, and furniture and design had to be built around that.
Can you talk about running a vintage restoration business? What's it like?
Sure. It's fun. It's because it's exactly what we love. We get to shop all the time, all day long. It's picking out pieces, researching the value and the history behind a lot of things. Business-wise, it's sustaining, building a website, a customer base, networking, social media.
So it's really like any other business.
Exactly. Any other
hitting
business.
Hitting on those basic uh-huh. tenets of business. Well, what's something about a vintage restoration business mm-hmm. that is not like any other business?
You have to lift heavy things.
That just comes with the territory.
Yeah, you just gotta, you know, accept it as a part of the business.
Gotcha. Well, at least you guys can build up arm muscles and shoulder muscles and
every
stuff.
Weekend we're working out.
Yeah, and then if like any other company tries to come in and like poach a client, you can just fight them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
You've kind of figured out our business model.
Oh, I'll be sure to stay away from you guys. I'm not getting in the game. I don't want you guys to think that I'm moving in on your territory. So with big box stores like Crate and Barrel and Pottery Barn and IKEA, why would somebody want to seek out a restoration business instead of just going to a store, getting what they want, and having that instant gratification?
Well, I think there's a place for both. I love IKEA. I love Crate and Barrel. I love Target. However, if you have a vintage piece, it's something that you can claim to be wholly yours. I can, when I walk in someone's house and I see an IKEA piece, I know it's from IKEA. And that doesn't take away from it. It's still a beautiful piece. But with vintage pieces and pieces that are more rare, it's easier to tell your own story.
And I also think with that, it's a point of pride that you can say that you have something that not everybody else has.
Or I agree.
You had something that was hard to acquire. And like you said, you hold that close to you.
Exactly.
Now, how sustainable is a restoration business?
It is sustainable because people need furniture. People want good quality furniture, and we are able to offer that at an affordable price. So that's exactly what is needed in the market.
Is your pricing factored into the work that you put in to restore the product, or are you just like, this armoire is nice, so we're going to sell it for this point because we can?
No, the price is factoring in a lot of things. It's factoring in the value of the piece. It's factoring in the work that we put into it, what level of restoration, if there are any imperfections in the piece. And we really strive to have pieces at kind of every price point. Maybe you can't get this $300 one today, but we have something really cool that you can get for $50.
So when starting Cedar and Cotton, did you ever have moments that you didn't think it was a good idea, or you and Raina were kind of self-conscious about two black women starting a vintage restoration business?
It never crossed my mind. I've never even considered it as an obstacle. It's actually an inspiration. I mean, we've built everything. We built this country. Everything black women touched turns into gold. So, you know, sanding down some wood, we got this.
Yeah, whatever the obstacle is, you guys will be able to overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 5 years in the future. What do you want Cedar and Cotton to have achieved in that time?
Well, right now we're internet based. In 5 years, we have brick and mortar storefront. We have both buyers and sellers clamoring at our door, wanting a little piece of the magic.
You're like, oh my God, Cedar, please let me in. You're like, guys, I can't. We have somebody else coming. You're like, I'll do anything.
I know you've been waiting here to buy this piece, but somebody just called on the phone and paid for it.
Well, speaking of that, can you talk about some of the clients that you had? Because I remember it last night. They were saying that you guys did some stuff for Dovecoat. What did you guys do for them?
We're reupholstering a sofa currently and lighting above the counter, as well as the bookcase that they have there.
Oh, really?
The goods, yes.
Where can people find Cedar and Cotton online?
At Cedar and Cotton on Instagram. We're Cedar and Cotton on Facebook. www.cedarandcotton.com. It's really, really straightforward. It's easy to get
Everything
to us.
Cedar and Cotton?
Everything is Cedar and Cotton.
Okay, cool. What are you guys working on now, or can you not say?
I can say. We have no secrets. We want everyone to know. We just had a huge shopping experience last weekend, so we have a ton of new pieces, a lot of new mid-century stuff, but also a lot of things from different eras. We're starting to explore kind of international design as well. And we're beginning to restore some of those pieces that we recently got, and we're slowly posting them to our site. We've posted two new pieces this week, and hopefully next week we'll get two or three more pieces up as well.
Well, Nasira and Raina, I know you're sitting behind me, but I want to thank you guys both for coming in and sitting down and talking to me about Cedar and Cotton, and I hope all of your wildest dreams come true.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you.
Local Color is written, edited, hosted, directed, and engineered by me, Jason V. Local Color's website was designed using the Morning WordPress theme, with website hosting provided by Skylar Newman. Media hosting is provided by Blueberry Podcasting. Visit blubrry.com to learn more. Local Color's theme music is by Dame Funk and was provided with permission by Stone's Throw Records. I'm Jason V, and I'll be back with more Local Color.